Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
All right, let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on edition number 3 of the College Hoops Today podcast. Please check us out on iTunes. And also, we want to hear from you on social media. Send me your questions at John Rothstein. That's JonRothstein. We will be joined by Cal head coach Quanzo Martin later in our program. But first, there's a couple of things that are really piquing my curiosity.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. John's 5 questions.
Question number 1. Which team made the biggest statement over the weekend? For me, it's an easy question to answer. The Miami Hurricanes. And if you have followed me, if you have read what I've written for CBSSports.com, and if you have listened to the first 2 editions of the College Hoops Today podcast, you know that I have been bullish on the Canes. And what they did this past weekend in Puerto Rico reiterates the fact that Jim Larrañaga, just as he did in 2013, has a legitimate chance to win the ACC regular season title. The Hurricanes made mincemeat out of Mississippi State in Utah and then held off a very good Butler team in the championship game of the Puerto Rico shootout. I voted them in the top 10 this week with my AP vote. They're a deep team with interchangeable parts, and to me, a big key on this team. I've spent a lot of time talking about the experience factor in the backcourt with 2 fifth-year seniors in Angel Rodriguez and Sheldon McClellan, but they have a player off the bench in Jaquan Newton that would start for most programs in America at point guard. He was a top 50 recruit out of high school. He had 17 off the bench against Butler. Question number 2. What did we learn about the Blue Bloods? Well, the Blue Bloods are always on center stage in college basketball early in the season. We start with Duke. The Blue Devils responded well after a loss to Kentucky in the Champions Classic with back-to-back victories at Madison Square Garden over VCU and Georgetown, respectively. To me, even though Grayson Allen has come out of the gates guns a-blazing and is playing like an All-American, the X factor for Duke is Derek Thornton. If Derek Thornton can stabilize the point guard position for the Blue Devils, Mike Krzyzewski's team will be where it always is in March, with a high seed in the NCAA tournament and a chance to make a deep run. What are my thoughts on Kentucky, the team that I voted number 1 in the AP poll this week? I think when you look at the Kentucky Wildcats, the perimeter is as good as any in college basketball, but the unsung presence for this basketball team is Isaac Humphries. Think back to the early minutes when Kentucky beat Duke in the Champions Classic. The Wildcats had no answer on the interior for Marshall Plumlee. Isaac Humphries came into the game, stabilized things defensively in the low post, and really solidified the middle. Kentucky has athletes up front with Poitras, Scalabissier, and also Marcus Lee. But the guy that can really guard burly low post players is Isaac Humphries. That's something to watch moving forward. What about Michigan State and what they did against Kansas in the Champions Classic? Denzel Valentine tallies a triple-double. I've written this. I've talked to Tom Izzo about this. Denzel Valentine has had a similar trajectory of his college career to that of Draymond Green. And he is in a position right now to have a Draymond Green type of senior year. First team All-American, National Player of the Year candidate, all things through East Lansing, all things through the Big Ten might flow around Denzel Valentine. And what about North Carolina? The loss to Northern Iowa, to me, is not a shocker on the road. That was the game that Roy Williams wanted to play to honor Marcus Page, who is from Iowa. But to me, this is something to keep an eye on moving forward when you look at the Tar Heels. I've watched North Carolina 3 times already this season from tip to buzzer. They are breathtaking in the open floor. And I said last week, and I will say it all season, when you look at their roster, it's like an all-you-can-eat buffet because there's a little bit of everything. But Northern Iowa was able to slow the Tar Heels down and make them execute in the half court. If Carolina gets in that situation in the ACC against teams like Virginia, against teams like Miami, I'm not certain how potent they're going to be. The key for Carolina, as it usually is under Roy Williams, the secondary break, getting easy baskets. Question number 3. Which team is better than I originally thought? the Purdue Boilermakers. I thought that Purdue had a chance to have a special season if it could stabilize the point guard position that John Octias played so well at last year. But watching the Boilers over the weekend at the Hall of Fame Classic in Connecticut, I have come to the realization, and I talked to Matt Painter about this on Sunday night, that this is Matt Painter's deepest team at Purdue. We don't know yet if it's his best team at Purdue, but when you think about the bevy of options that this team has at its disposal, it's pretty frightening. He's got 2 7-footers in Hammonds and Isaac Haas. He's got a guy in Caleb Swanigan who came in as a McDonald's All-American but is developing into an all-star type role player. And as far as the shooters around those bigs go, Purdue beat Florida by 15 points, shot 50% from the field, and Kendall Stevens, arguably this team's best outside shooter, did not have a made field goal. The Boilermakers, I believe, are going to be in the upper tier of the Big Ten. Question number four, did the Big East answer the bell? Absolutely. Absolutely. The Big East had a rough start to the season when Georgetown lost to Radford at home and Marquette lost to Belmont at home, two things that happened within the first 24 hours of the season. But Xavier, Butler, and Georgetown all showed well this week. Xavier was exceptionally impressive in a double-figure win at Michigan on Friday night in Ann Arbor as part of the Gavitt Games. Butler, even though it lost to Miami in Puerto Rico, looked like an NCAA tournament team and is getting a huge, huge boost from the addition of NC State transfer Tyler Lewis. He's taking immense pressure off Roosevelt Jones. And Georgetown, despite the fact that it has a 1-3 record after this weekend, in my opinion, might be the best 1-3 team in the history of college basketball. The Hoyas could have beaten Maryland. They could have beaten Duke. As long as Georgetown continues to get better, and they will also get healthier because Trey Campbell and Paul White, two rotation players, did not play in New York, Georgetown will be a team that I don't think has a chance to make the NCAA tournament. I think they'll wind up with a high seed in the NCAA tournament. The big question, though, in the Big East, can anybody challenge Villanova? Just a little stat, and we're going to have more nuggets later in the podcast. Just a little stat to remember when you're evaluating the Big East. Villanova, in the last 2 years, has beaten 35 Big East opponents by an average of 15.6 points per game. The final question, which team could break out nationally this week? I am going to go to the battle for Atlantis, and I'm going to take the Texas A&M Aggies. To me, after watching the Aggies practice a couple of weeks ago in College Station, I believe that Texas A&M is the SEC's version of Noah's Ark because they've got two of everything. We've looked and we've examined recruiting classes from soup to nuts across the country, but one recruiting class that is not getting enough credit, the Aggies, four-man quartet of Elijah Thomas, Tyler Davis, DJ Hogue, and Admond Gilder. Texas plays Texas A&M Wednesday night in the first round of the Battle for Atlantis. Don't be surprised if more people at the end of this week are bullish on the Aggies. One team I'm bullish on, the Cal Bears. And the head coach of Cal, Konzo Martin, joins us next. This is John Rothstein on the College Hoops Today podcast. SeatGeek is so easy to use and completely different from other ticket sites. SeatGeek pulls the ticket data from all those other ticket sales sites into one place to save you time. The best part is it shows you the full price of the ticket up front, never hides any fees, and usually has lower prices than other ticket sites and is backed by a 100% guarantee. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 ticket rebate, download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter promo code HOOPS. SeatGeek will send you $20 once you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app. Enter promo code HOOPS today. John Rothstein back here on the College Hoops Today podcast, and Cal has been one of the sexier teams to start the 2015-16 college basketball season, and the Bears have loaded potentially one of the better starting fives in all of college basketball, and the head coach of Cal is on the line right now. He is Konzo Martin, and Konzo, I'm curious, what do you think your reaction would have been if somebody told you when you first got the job that the roster you're coaching right now in your second season would be the roster that you have in place?
I would have said thank you. I mean, just, you know, I think it's a lot of hard work with the staff and recruiting from that standpoint. But it's also credit to the previous staff because they had some quality pieces here. They had a year under their belt to be with our program. So just to put all that together, but there's still plenty of work to do, but we like our parts.
You know, you mentioned that the prior staff did a tremendous job building your roster at Cal. You know, not a lot of people really look at this, but what is it like? And you've had to do this at a couple of different stops when you inherit a team and a personnel group that was recruited by somebody else.
Well, I think the biggest key you like to have in your program, everybody wants to have good players. That's the obvious part. But I think for us is to have quality guys, quality student athletes, guys that have a passion, that want to be good, that want to take care of business in the classroom, because the things that you don't want to do, you don't want to be fighting guys in the midnight hours or doing the right things. I've been blessed everywhere I've been to have some success in that part. So, the previous staff did a great job of getting quality student athletes and guys that have a passion for being successful on and off the court.
Now, you return three starters on the perimeter this year in Tyrone Wallace, Jabari Bird, and Jordan Matthews, and you were able to sign a local star in Ivan Rabb, but the pendulum really shifted for Cal when you were able to get a commitment from Jaylen Brown. What was your pitch to Jaylen during the recruiting process?
Well, the thing about with Jaylen Brown, we knew him when he was a freshman in high school, and I head coach at Tennessee, so we had a relationship with him. I think it really started with Ivan Rabb and Jaylen Brown. Both of those guys really connected. And that's when that ball started to turn, so to speak, and it was fun from that standpoint. And again, both of those guys had an opportunity to play at Cal and play right away. So everything worked out for them. So it wasn't a case where we had guys stockpiling their positions. So Cal was a unique situation. It was a great opportunity. Ivan Rapp's obviously from Oakland, and in Jaylen Brown's case, an opportunity to play right away and be successful. And they both had that opportunity everywhere they wanted to go. But I think both of them guys being together said we could make this happen.
If there was one player, past or present, that Jaylen Brown most reminded you of, who would it be?
Boy, that's a tough question. A lot of people say, Stanley Johnson from Arizona. I think he has similarities to Glenn Robinson, who I played with in high school. I mean, college. He's my teammate. Glenn spent 3 years in college. So very similar type of guys, the way they attack, the aggressiveness, how they score the ball, the intensity in which they play the game. So very similar to probably Glenn Robinson, I would imagine.
Cal head coach Konzo Martin joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoop Today podcast. Bears, one of the favorites this year in the Pac-12. And, we've mentioned Ivan Rabb a couple of times already. You coached an elite freshman big man while you were at Tennessee in Jarnell Stokes. How does Ivan compare to Stokes as a freshman?
I think the difference between those two guys. Now, one, in Jarnell Stokes' case, he didn't play his senior of high school. So he left early in that December. He came in January and played with us at Tennessee. So he was learning on scratch. So from scratch, he didn't have a summer and a fall to get ready. So he started in January. And he was playing right away in his first game. It was against Kentucky. And I think that was the year they won a national championship. And he had a really good game. That was his first college game. But I think in Jarnell's case, he was 270 pounds, 6'8", 6'9". He was physically ready to play and bang in that area. And I think Ivan Rabb's case, he's probably more skilled on the perimeter as far as making plays, having the ball, scoring with both hands, passing with both hands. So very different from the standpoint of how they go about their business, but similar in rebounding in basketball. Two of the best rebounders I've ever been around.
Ivan Rabb's a key piece in your front court. We will now switch to your back court. Ty Wallace has played like an All-American to start the season, but there's definitely going to be times this season where he may have to shoot less and pass more for Cal to be successful. How much was that part of the dialogue when he was deciding whether or not to return to school for his senior year?
I think we sat down and talked about him, whether or not he would return. It was really getting the information from the NBA and pretty much what they said. But the most important thing for him in his return was getting his degree. I think that was probably the most important thing, but also the pieces around him. Tyrone wanted to be successful. And I think deep down inside he wanted to come back to school, but he wanted to be right. But it was never talked about how many shots he would get because he's not consumed with shots. But he does such a good job in attacking the basket. So a lot of times he gets to the free throw line. A lot of times his shots are around the rim because he gets to the basket. And for me, I want him to do it every chance he gets. And he's improved his ability to shoot three-point shot. And he's shooting that shot in rhythm. But Tyrone's a guy that wants to win. And my job is to put him in position to be successful.
Cal head coach Konzo Martin joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Bears, one of the favorites in the Pac-12. My opinion, the best starting five in college basketball. And Konzo, every coach who feels like he has a good team wants to see how his team responds to adversity. Your team will play San Diego State Thursday night in Las Vegas. Are you kind of hoping to get some of that to see how your team responds if it gets punched in the mouth?
you know, really we got a little bit of that against East Carolina. East Carolina plays, they play a zone the whole night. They got back, set their defense. They made it hard on us. And we hadn't seen a zone. So it was good for our guys to go against that. We found a way to win the game. So I think with San Diego State, Coach Fitchers does, obviously does a tremendous job with his guys, getting them ready, length, athleticism, physical play. So it'll be great for our guys. And I think every challenge, every game presents something different. And we look forward to the exciting part of that game and really kind of picking parts of the game and trying to be successful within the game.
You know, we mentioned the word adversity, and you've had to deal with plenty in your life. You've battled cancer. You had to deal with a fan base of Tennessee that didn't necessarily want you as the head coach. When you think about all the things, Konzo, that you've already had to deal with, does coaching this team and getting it to gel seem insignificant when you take a step back?
Well, I think it's always significant because it's your job. It's the task at hand. But the things that I've gone through in life are pretty much what I feel like God has blessed me to go through and to learn lessons and live through them. And then you can teach young men when you're going through those things, these are the things that you might deal with in life. So learn from my mistakes or learn from what I went through. So now I can help you navigate through life. So I just think it's challenges you go through in life. Everybody goes through something, some just not exposed through the media or in the public eyes, but everybody goes through something. Even 18 and 22 year old college guys, they experience a lot of adversity. You got guys that play a lot in high school. Now all of a sudden in college, they don't play. They lose family members while they're in college. How do you deal with that? So everybody goes through some, but just how you handle it and try to navigate through it.
What's the biggest thing that you're enjoying at Cal that maybe you weren't enjoying as head coach of Tennessee?
Well, you know, I had a lot of great times in Knoxville, to be totally honest with you. I mean, a lot of wonderful people. I think sometimes that is blown out of proportion. But I think as fans, you have a right to feel the way you want to feel. And there's no, because you pay for a product. You want to see something, you pay for what you want. That's fine. I think here, I mean, the weather's obviously great. I mean, there are good people in Knoxville, good people out here. I just think, you know, as long as I'm happy to have a peace of mind, that is the most important thing for me. And I think for my family, peace of mind, it happens. And that's the most important thing.
How does the pressure of following Bruce Pearl at Tennessee compare to the pressure of maybe replacing Mike Montgomery at Cal?
Well, I think for me, again, I've never felt pressure like that because, again, so you have to do a job. The most important thing, you're hired to do a job and to do the job to the best of your ability. And my job is to put young men in position to be successful on and off the court. And that's how I always looked at it. I've never looked at it any other way because you're following somebody, somebody's coming behind you. I mean, I won't coach here for 50, 60 years, and that's the way it is. You do the best job you can do, and then you move on.
Cal head coach Konzo Martin joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Bears in San Diego State, Thanksgiving night in Las Vegas. If you can fight off the tryptophan, it's must-see TV. You know, Konzo, you're a disciple of Gene Katie. You played at Purdue, had a great career in the Big Ten. What's the biggest thing you learned from Coach Katie that you still apply to your program on an everyday basis?
Well, I think the one thing Coach talked about with our guys is just try your best to go to class every day. Mm-hmm. Every day. Try your best to go to class every day. And he used to always say, when you go to class, you put $100 in your bank account. And every day you miss class, you take $1,000 out. And I didn't have a lot of money to start with, so I knew I had to go to class to make it happen, you know. But Coach, I mean, obviously a tremendous basketball coach, a great teacher. But I think I learned a lot of lessons about life being around Coach Katie, listening to him talk. You know how it is, and we say it all the time. When you're 18 and 22 years old, you hear it, but then you feel it as you get older. You feel it and you start living that way. And a lot of things I talk about, a lot of things I say has a lot to do with Coach Katie.
Final thing for me, Konzo, what person on your team is maybe off the radar right now but needs to emerge as a real player for your team to win a Pac-12 title and be a dangerous team towards the end of the season?
Well, I think there are probably two guys, in my opinion. I think it's Sam Singh and Stephen Domingos. I think both those guys have the quality to be starters. Very intelligent young men. They understand how to play the game, but I just think those two guys are keys for what we need to do in order for us to take that level of success that we think we're capable of taking.
Konzo, good stuff. We appreciate a couple minutes. You know, it's going to be a real battle for us people who enjoy good meals on Thursday to stay up on the East Coast to watch you play San Diego State. I mean, by 12 o'clock, you know, we might have had 5 or 6 courses already.
No, go ahead and try to stay up. It should be fun.
We appreciate it, Konzo. Thanks. Best of luck moving forward.
Thank you, John.
We'd like to thank Cal's Konzo Martin for joining us. And again, we want you to check us out on iTunes and give us a review. Tell us what you think as we continue to march forward here and continue to dissect, digest, and offer some perspective on college basketball. 52 weeks out of the year, but now it's time for some nuggets.
5 good nuggets.
5.
5.
6. No, five. But you were close.
Nugget number one. Could the Twin Towers be coming to Tucson? Well, I talked to Arizona's Sean Miller over the weekend, and he told me that Dusan Ristić, the 7-foot Serbian sophomore, will play more moving forward with Caleb Tarzewski. Ristić, again, had as good of a summer as anybody in Arizona's program. According to Miller, he had 9 points and 10 rebounds in 22 minutes on Sunday night against Northwestern State. Nugget number two, Bearcat power, Bearcat explosion. This is not a misprint. Cincinnati is averaging 96.3 points per game through its first 4 games. The Bearcats only broke 80 during all of last season. Nugget number three, Arch's Art. Ryan Arcidiacono, the senior point guard for Villanova, has 22 assists to just 1 turnover through the Wildcats' first 4 games. Some people say that's illegal in 48 states. Nugget number four, Tony Bennett has switched Virginia's lineup. Bennett opted to start Jack Salt at center against George Mason and bring Mike Toby off the bench. Toby responded with 14 points and 8 rebounds, and a lot of coaches like the idea of bringing somebody off the bench that they know they're going to get production out of. This could be something to watch moving forward for Virginia. Number five, who is better than their record? I mentioned this earlier in the podcast about Georgetown. They are significantly better than their 1-3 record, but so is Temple. The Owls opened the season against North Carolina, then went to Puerto Rico. They beat Minnesota. They were in the game against Butler before losing by 5, and then they were nip and tuck again with Utah before Brandon Taylor threw in a miracle fling from the right corner. Temple better than 1-3, but has to start winning games. We are now going to take it to our social media portion of the podcast. We want to hear from you, and again, if you have any questions, just tweet us at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. The first question right now is, what do you think is going to happen at the top of the Atlantic 10? Look, I think one thing we've learned about the Atlantic 10, Dayton is Dayton. George Washington has drawn a line in the sand, but I still believe that Rhode Island, VCU, and Davidson have what it takes to compete at a high level of this conference. VCU, although it did not win a game at Madison Square Garden, showed very well against Duke and also Wisconsin, a game that it could have won. Meanwhile, question number two right now, do you think that Villanova is overrated? Absolutely not. I think that Villanova is in a situation right now where it has to deal with a more difficult non-conference schedule, and you have to credit Jay Wright for that. I think when you look at Villanova and what they've done with their non-conference schedule, I think Villanova has to be commended for going out and playing the game on December 7th against Oklahoma and Hawaii, and also starting a home-and-home series with Virginia. The Cats have not had those type of games on the schedule the last couple of years, and we know what's happened with Villanova. They've run through the Big East like a chainsaw through butter, but they have stumbled in the round of 32 of the NCAA tournament. Now we're going to see what potentially could happen to Villanova when they take on different styles and they take on teams, Oklahoma and Virginia, that have a real chance to go deep into the NCAA tournament. So I'm looking forward to Villanova's next 6 games. Our next question, Oregon looks like a Pac-12 favorite early on, John. Do you agree? I think that Oregon, and I wrote this week at CBSSports.com, when it gets healthy, will be right there with Cal, Arizona, and Utah at the top of this conference. Let's think about this for a second. Dana Altman does not have his starting point guard, and he also does not have his starting center. And still, Oregon last week beat both Baylor and Valpo. Dylan Ennis, the 5th-year transfer from Villanova, is out until at least Christmas, according to what Altman told me last week with a foot injury. And Jordan Bell, who averaged 2.7 blocks a game last year as a freshman, is out until sometime in December as well. And the Ducks, again, still marching forward. So I have been bullish on Oregon for a while. I will have to say I am very surprised that they were able to beat both Baylor and Valpo without their starting point guard and their starting center, arguably the two most important positions on the floor. Meanwhile, it is Thanksgiving on Thursday, so there's going to be a lot to feast on as we get ready for one of the best eating days of the year. But what else should you be keeping your eye on?
Games to watch. Games to watch.
All right, I'm going to start Wednesday. Battle for Atlantis, Washington against Gonzaga. Lorenzo Romar has been bullish about this freshman class. He's got four first-year starters right now for the Huskies. They take on Gonzaga in a game that is a true battle of the Great Northwest. I want to see how Washington follows things up against a real team. Again, the Huskies won a game in Asia to start the season against Texas. Can they do it with an encore? Can they get an encore going against Gonzaga? A big advantage, though, for Washington this game, fifth-year point guard Andrew Andrews. He's been absolutely sensational. The other game I'm looking at Wednesday in the battle for Atlantis, Texas and Texas A&M. Shaka Smart against Billy Kennedy. I have been bullish on Texas A&M's recruiting class already in this podcast, but I want to bring out something else right now on the Aggies. Jalen Jones, the starting point guard for Texas A&M, has yet to play this season because of an NCAA issue. He will make his season debut for Texas A&M against Texas. This game is big because it's an in-state rivalry, but it's also big for recruiting. Texas A&M has dominated recruiting in the state of Texas the last year and a half. Texas under Shaka Smart still trying to find its way. So that's a big game, not just because it's a game in the first round of a prestigious tournament, but also because in the state of Texas, whoever wins this game will have tremendous, tremendous leverage moving forward when they recruit in-state prospects. On Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, really intrigued to see what happens with Wichita State and USC. Now, I reported for CBSSports.com on Sunday that Fred VanVleet was questionable at best for this game against USC due to a hamstring injury. And frankly, I want to see what Andy Enfield's team is made of. The Trojans played exceptionally well, put up 90 on New Mexico at the Galen Center Saturday night. They can really score the ball. They're getting tremendous mileage out of their two freshman bigs, Benny Boatwright on offense, Chimezie Metu on defense. Is USC turning a corner? We'll have a good idea. And then a nightcap on Thursday night. I've got two of them to put in bold print. Dayton against Iowa in Orlando. Two well-coached teams that have been perennially in the NCAA tournament under Archie Miller and Fran McCaffrey. And then another game that I think is going to be interesting on Thanksgiving night is in Anaheim. Providence against Evansville. The Friars trying to join the Big East party. Rodney Bullock has been playing like an all-Big East player out of the gate, really operating as Robin compared to Chris Dunn as Batman. But is Evansville a legitimate contender to the rest of the top of the Mountain West? They've got a terrific 1-2 punch in DJ Ballantyne and Egidius Makavicius. This is the type of forum that Evansville could really, really use to make its case as a potential at-large candidate. Again, we want you to check us out on iTunes and give us a review of what you think. This has been the third edition of the College Hoops Today podcast. We will be joining you every week from now until Kingdom Come.